WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Now, over the last decade, Vladimir Putin has gained seemingly unshakable support in Russia, partly because he's completely closed the press, and partly because of his willingness to challenge the United States and Europe. He invaded Ukraine and Georgia, former Soviet republics. He sent bombers to intervene in the Syrian civil war on behalf of the Assad regime. And he likely okayed the killing on British soil of a former KGB agent. And then, of course, there was the hack of the Democratic National Committee emails, very probably the work of a Russian hacker or hackers. Not since the Cold War has a U.S. election centered so much on the question of how to handle Russia and its political ambitions. Trying to sort this through, I sat down with Hillary Clinton's top policy advisor, Jake Sullivan. Sullivan was deputy chief of Clinton's staff when she was Secretary of State, and he was Vice President Biden's national security advisor.
There was a moment during the Obama administration with Secretary Clinton on airplanes going back and forth to Moscow and to other nations in Europe that was called the reset. Mm-hmm. And the relationship has completely soured. Do you think that under a Clinton administration, a Hillary Clinton administration, it would be possible to reset again? Or is that relationship really for the foreseeable future going to be adversarial and a kind of maintenance to keep that at a low burn?
I think it's going to be a challenging relationship because Putin has made fundamentally clear where he stands on a number of issues that are adverse to the United States. On the other hand, Secretary Clinton, if she's elected president, is going to continue to look for opportunities to cooperate. She was involved in getting the nuclear treaty through that reduced U.S. and Russian stockpiles to their lowest level in decades. She was involved in working with the Russians on Iran and North Korea sanctions, in getting the Russians to agree to allow lethal transit of supplies to our troops in Afghanistan. And of course, in the accession of Russia to the WTO. So she's not shelving the concept that there are places where the United States and Russia can work together.
Do you think we're in a new Cold War right now?
No.
Why not? Just
last year, the United States and Russia worked together to produce the agreement with Iran that has put a lid on Iran's nuclear program. So we are clearly capable of continuing to work with them. But do I believe that we are in a challenging space where Russia is going after some of the core basic principles of international law, invading sovereign countries, threatening our allies?
But they look at us and they say, wait a minute. They say, you are absolute hypocrites, the United States. You have invaded Iraq and made a mess of the Middle East. You have invaded all kinds of countries over the years, whether it's in the Balkans or Libya, which we quote-unquote told you not to do. How do we go about lecturing Vladimir Putin when it comes to the sovereignty of other countries? And that's the Russian psychology, and that's certainly Putin's psychology.
And he has laid that out at length
in
some of his speeches. I think these are debaters' points and false equivalences. He loves to compare Kosovo to Crimea and Ukraine. And on a number of different dimensions, they are not at all comparable, starting with the fact that his asserted reason for going into Crimea in the first place, that the Crimean people were somehow going to be subject to gross and systematic human rights violations, is a bunch of nonsense. So what Putin does is he points to circumstances where the United States has engaged in interventions, primarily for humanitarian reasons, primarily with many other countries joining us, and then tries to say, I'm just doing the same thing. But a close examination of those circumstances shows just how different they are.
But he would argue that those invasions have caused untold chaos and geopolitical problems in their wake.
Well, there's no doubt that the invasion of Iraq was ultimately a mistake and caused tremendous damage and tremendous problems. And the United States needs to take responsibility for that. But the U.S. taking responsibility for what happened in Iraq does not excuse Vladimir Putin's destabilizing actions in Ukraine, nor does it excuse the saber-rattling and the incredibly aggressive behavior he's displaying towards our allies.
What are you concerned about next coming from Vladimir Putin? Where do you suppose that he will make his next moves, whether it's in Ukraine again, whether it's in the Baltic states, where?
I think we do have to worry about the direct assaults on NATO allies. He's shown with his various instruments of military power that's a possibility. But the thing that really worries me in the immediate term is actually not so much tanks rolling across a frontier as the insidious exercise of malign influence over democracies in Eastern and emerging democracies in Southeastern Europe. The use of corruption, the use of political pressure, the use of economic pressure to try to stunt democratic development and undermine and destabilize countries on his border. That's an asymmetric form of low-grade warfare that I think the United States and our allies need to get used to seeing from Russia and need to be prepared to deal with.
One of the most incredible parts of maybe the most incredible campaign of my lifetime or yours is the Russian element that is taking place in the presidential campaign. To see emails, in fact, some of your own emails to Secretary Clinton and Vice and emails going back to you that have been hacked almost certainly by Russian hackers, either doing the bidding of Vladimir Putin or with the winking acknowledgement of Vladimir Putin. Tell me what your view and Secretary Clinton's view is of why he's doing this. Is it just a way to mess with us? Is it personal? Is it strategic? What is it?
The stakes on this issue are so high. The fact that Russia and Russian intelligence agencies are actively meddling in this election, the stakes of that are so high that I really think it is inappropriate to speculate as to motive. All we can state are the facts, and these are the facts that we know. We know, number one, that there is now a consensus of experts that the Russians have done this. We know, number two, that the Trump campaign's policy agenda on a wide range of foreign policy matters lines up very neatly with Vladimir Putin's wish list for what an American president would do on Russia.
You should make clear what that wish list is. How do they line up?
Number one, that we wouldn't necessarily back up our NATO allies in the event of a Russian invasion. Number two, that we should consider lifting sanctions on Russia. Number three, that Trump campaign officials actually intervened in the Republican platform to remove references to support for Ukraine. And number four, a total excusing of anti-democratic behavior in Russia and waving away of things as egregious as the killing of journalists, using Vladimir Putin's own logic that, well, the United States has its own problems, so why are we lecturing other countries? Those are just some of the examples of where the Trump campaign and Trump himself have gone out and basically adopted not just the position, but the logic and the rhetoric of Vladimir Putin. So we know that. We also know that Hillary Clinton has, on a number of occasions over the last several years and in this campaign, stood up to and countered some of those positions, been against Putin on certain things. And so
to the point where, as I understand it, Jake, that when they're in the same room together, it's a very nasty atmosphere. Can you speak to that?
It's not a nasty atmosphere. I think it's an atmosphere that is tough and direct, but not nasty. They were able to have practical and productive conversations when they met about sanctions on Iran and North Korea, and even talked about issues kind of far beyond traditional statecraft, what to do, for example, about wildlife trafficking. So it's not like Hillary Clinton and Vladimir Putin can't sit down.
But wait a minute. I've heard about a certain meeting between the two of them when they were in the same room when Putin would barely look at Hillary Clinton.
Well, the times that I've been in the room with the two of them, not only were they looking at each other, but they were speaking very plainly and directly. And Hillary Clinton was saying to Putin at the time, there are areas where we can cooperate, but there are areas where I need to tell you and look you in the eye and tell you the United States is not going to support what you are doing. Putin was just as direct and candid in response. I did not find a circumstance where it was either nasty or where they didn't have the capacity to work together with one another.
Do you think this business of hacked emails is going to go farther? There has been a long history in Russian politics of what's called kompromat. Compromising information, films of people in their private lives, sometimes having sex, sometimes doing smoking dope or whatever it is. This is very, very common in the Russian political sphere. Do you assume and fear that in the coming couple of months of the campaign that more is coming?
Given Russia's track record and Putin's track record, it would be folly to assume that there isn't more that they would try to do to disrupt the election, more emails that they would put out. So I think we have to proceed on the assumption that that is very possibly going to happen. I would just say that whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent, that should absolutely motivate you to say, what the heck are we going to do as the United States of America to push back against a foreign power, an oftentimes adversarial foreign power, interfering in the basic institution of democracy in the United States? That is a national security issue.
It is something new under the sun. We assumed that, to a great extent, they bug our conversations. And let's face it, we bug a lot of theirs. It's a great record of our knowledge of conversations that have taken place inside the Kremlin in the cars of Russian and formerly Soviet officials. Let's not be naive about this. We're here sitting in a studio. You've got an iPhone on the desk, which is also a tracking device, a camera, a movie camera, a recorder. I think anybody who's not naive knows what that implies in terms of its intelligence capacities. How are governments going to ever assume with any sense of confidence, with much less political campaigns, that they can operate with any sense of discretion and secrecy?
I think that's becoming increasingly more difficult, not just because of the seals that Russia is breaking, but also because of things like WikiLeaks and other developments that make the exchange of emails, phone conversations. You sort of have to increasingly assume that everything you do outside of a secured facility could easily end up in the public domain.
You're somebody who's been mentioned any number of times as the national security advisor for Hillary Clinton. We'll see if that happens. But is your style of conversing over email changed?
Yes.
From what to what?
Well, at this point, you cannot use email as a means of communicating anything of really meaningful substance, classified or otherwise.
At what point did it change?
I think it developed over the course of my time in government, and certainly since we have seen what has happened with both WikiLeaks and now increasingly with what the Russians are doing, every passing year I become more and more terse and careful in the use of email, but not just email, the use of the telephone as well. And, you know, I think there's an unfortunate dimension to this because the freedom to be able to exchange ideas, discuss matters across great distances, a U.S. government that's in hundreds of posts around the world, has been compromised to a significant extent. And the result of that is that it is more difficult to actually conduct business for the U.S. government than it was before. But that's the nature of operating in the information environment we're in now.
Jacob Sullivan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jake Sullivan is a foreign policy advisor to Hillary Clinton and worked in the Obama administration.